future lay out there in the bullpen.
The starters are out. Now it's time to head to the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
Who would it now? ESPN
Radio 97.5 and 92.5 live today from the Kima Boardwalk as a part of their Oktoberfest. Brian McDonald, Sean Mapes with you here until 2 o'clock. John Belmer back in studio, and Cam's not with us today because he had a wedding, wasn't it? Is that what he got dragged off to?
Yes.
A wedding of, I don't want to put his business out there, but it didn't sound like he was super enthused.
I was going to provide a different detail that wasn't directly disparaging to the wedding he's at, but yes.
Dear bride and groom, he doesn't want to be there. Hope they're not necessarily. No, of course not. They're preparing for their
nuptials. The happiest day
of their life. And
it's the happiest day of our life because we're here.
Yes.
At
yes.
Kima Boardwalk.
At the Oktoberfest here until 2 o'clock. So come out and check us out. We're in the main plaza, kind of near the aquarium and the stage where the bands play. If you need a geographic footprint of where you can find us, we're also by Sweet Scoops, the Pizza Oven. Lots of great things to come out there to Kima and see. We'll tell you more about what's going on today at Kima Boardwalk as the show goes on. Sean, before we get into the Texans, though, and this also. Includes the Texans in this because it kind of made me think of this question. Big question today that I'll set up now. We'll talk about throughout the show, and if you have any thoughts or opinions on what this answer should be, you can weigh in either call or text on the HRMP listener line 713-780-3776. So, big question of the day, Sean and John back in studio. What franchises in sports have most owned Houston teams? And I obviously bring that up because one of the teams that would be right at the top of my list, probably my Mount Rushmore, I wouldn't even have to do a plus one to get them in there, is the Baltimore Ravens. Obviously, the Texans have been playing since 2002. Quick math, that means this is year 24 for the team, and they've won zero games in Baltimore, only two wins against the Ravens overall. I believe it's like a 2-13 record, 2-11 record, with their last win coming in 2014.
I was going to say, I don't even remember.
J.J. Watt was a young man when the Texans last beat the Ravens.
We were yelling, turn down for Watt.
Yes, we were.
Back when
we
were.
He'd only won one Defensive Player of the Year. He'd won two. He hadn't won the third one yet.
Yeah.
So it was a long, long time ago, Sean. But besides the Ravens, any other franchises come to your mind immediately when I ask the question of what franchise? I think I know where you're going to go. We'll see if you let me down here. But what franchise is the most owned Houston teams?
I mean, the Golden State Warriors.
Yeah, that's the 1A. Yeah.
I mean, they would have it even if last April didn't happen.
Right.
Like, they would still have it.
Yes.
Was
it 5-0 in the playoffs?
Yes, I think so.
At least 4-0, right. But I think it's sounds 5. Right. I think it was 4-0 going into last year.
Yeah, so that's a good one because there's like not some of these. There's like a get back where the Texans did eventually the Houston team eventually did knock them off.
Like the Astros with the Braves for a long time. The Braves owned the Astros in the 90s, and then they beat them in back to back.
Or like the Cardinals
04-05. Yeah, same thing.
Where
they
get the get back, but with the Ravens and with the Warriors,
there's been no get back, Sean.
Still waiting.
Still waiting.
Not yet.
Tomorrow.
Not yet.
Tomorrow, Sean. Let's talk about it.
Yeah.
Texans Ravens at noon. They're in Baltimore. Texans, of course, trying to get their second win of the year. Ravens trying to get the second win of the year. The loser of this game will be 1-4, and probably, although less so in the Ravens' case, and although Lamar Jackson's health will play a huge factor in this, but the loser probably done, although the Ravens, if they get Lamar back, certainly capable of running off a lot of wins in a row. But let's talk about the state of the Texans going into this game, because obviously the offensive struggles have been the biggest story with this team so far. And it continued for three quarters against the Titans, Sean, until they scored, out of nowhere, three touchdowns in the fourth quarter. I know it was against the Titans, but let's ask the question. Do you think any of the offensive woes were righted in that fourth quarter against the Titans? How do you feel any better about the Texans' offense coming out of that strong finish as you did going into that game?
I mean, I guess I feel a little bit better just because they actually did score touchdowns.
Right, right.
But those touchdowns come with, like, not asterisks, but just a lot of context in them where the two of those touchdown drives were 40 and 30 yards. You know, they weren't long, sustained drives.
They're set up by the defense.
Yes, yeah. And then you throw in the fact that it's a team whose quarterback described them as ass after the game.
That's one of my favorite. That's my favorite quote of the year so far.
And the idea that they, I'm not going to say they quit, but the defense, obviously, when your offense is giving you literally nothing
right.
the entire time, there's going to be a drop the rope element of the defense. I felt like that happened on Sunday against the Titans. So there really isn't a lot that I'm like, ah, yes, the good stuff. It's a brand new day for Texans football. I mean, really, it's just Woody Marks look good. That's about it.
Yeah, I think that's the big takeaway, because, I mean, one of the things I think you and I and Cam had talked about going into that game against the Titans is they'd score three touchdowns through three games. And when you look at those touchdowns, as bad as that number is already on the surface,
yeah.
But then when you dig further into it, not only have they only scored three touchdowns in three games, but because one of them came on a broken play where the defense just completely fell apart when Nico Collins burned. I can't remember what Jaguars cornerback
was. There was no Jag corner.
Yeah, he wasn't even the screen. So you had that one, one of the ones against the Buccaneers was, I'm forgetting what the problem with that one was.
Oh, the Nick Chubb one.
They let him score. Yeah. There we go. Thank you. So they scored three touchdowns going into the Titans game. One of them was when the Buccaneers let them score so they could get the ball back. And the other one was with Nico Collins streaking down the sideline with not a single defender in sight because they completely busted the coverage. So in three games, they scored one touchdown, like legit touchdown. Mm-hmm. And then, okay, fourth quarter is great. You then go three quarters in the Titans game, one of the worst teams in the league, and you scored zero touchdowns in the first three quarters. So really we're talking about, especially if you want to talk about when the Titans let go of the rope like you mentioned, we're still talking about four games, maybe like two touchdowns we could be proud of?
Yeah, it's just that, and it's better that, hey, listen, at least they scored two touchdowns that we, again, look at askant, because before that they weren't really scoring two touchdowns in a game. So I think that there's a lot of optimism, or any optimism that there is from the Titans game. I think it's, like, a little overstated. It's just kind of a, like, congrats, you're not the worst team in the
league. You're not also ass,
yeah,
like the Titans.
Congrats.
Yeah.
And now you look ahead to this game, and you're getting Cooper Rush instead of Lamar Jackson. Okay. So already, like,
sounds
a little
good.
Bit.
I like it.
Yes. This Baltimore Ravens defense is terrible. Okay.
And they're hurt.
Good.
Although they do get Kyle Van Noy back.
Yes. And basically, other than Kyle Van Noy, every Ravens defender with a good reputation heading into the season is hurt. Because
yeah, it looks like Wiggins will play, but I don't know if he's 100%.
Roquan Smith. Matabike's definitely out.
Hamilton missed some time
in practice.
Marlon Humphrey, I believe, is at least banged up. Jair Alexander, I don't think, has made his debut yet this season, right?
So it's not only is a really bad Ravens defense, it's a very hurt one, and the guys who are hurt aren't the backups. It's the starters that are hurt.
I saw a graphic that Stressen reposted. I can't remember who the original was. Sorry, I can't give credit there. But I saw it on Stressen's account where they posted.
At least somebody's getting credit, right?
At least someone's getting credit. I'm at least passing it off somewhere, and then Stressen has to then pay it forward.
Yes.
Stressen's, if you're listening, please pay it forward. But they posted a graphic of the Ravens starting lineup from the Christmas game last year, which, I don't know if you remember, didn't go well for the Texans.
No.
But they had, you know, specifically on the defensive side, you know, 11 starters, and only one guy on that 11 starters was completely healthy. The other 10 were all either confirmed out or, you know, questionable and, you know, still dealing with something. So I don't want to call this a get-right game because I don't believe the Texans' offense is necessarily one that I can – like, it feels like a get-right game implies you were right in the first place, right?
I think a get-right game implies that, like, then you can take what
you got.
Like, you got right in that game, and going forward you will continue to be right.
I don't know if I can say that for the Texans.
Yeah, I think – when they they'll have a bye week and then they'll play the Seattle Monday night, who has one of the best defenses in the league.
And it'll be on the road too, one of the toughest places to play in the NFL.
And then you have the Niners, also a pretty good defense, although they might be hurt by then too.
Unfortunately, the Texans don't have a Puka Nacua to Nico Collins is pretty good, but unless you have Puka, I don't know, man. That Niners defense is pretty rough.
They knocked off the Rams on Thursday, so we saw that. So I think that's why I'm not really buying the like perceived improvement from the Titans game, and even in this game I'm like they might win. They haven't earned the benefit of the doubt that like this Texans team will definitely go into Baltimore and take care of business and come out with the win. But I even if they do that, I still am like this Chiefs offense looked terrible all season, and then they look like the greatest show on turf last
week.
They
looked like the Chiefs yes. of like 4 years ago.
So
yeah.
it's like I just don't think, I mean, unless they do just drop like a 40 on the Ravens, there'll just be a level of like, yeah, okay, like, sure.
Yeah, I think
don't believe the hype, people.
I think the Texans, because of how banged up the Ravens defense is and because Lamar Jackson's not there, can win this game on defense, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if it looks a lot like the Titans game did, I'm not going
to
feel any
if
different.
They have to win it on defense the way that they were close to winning out on defense against the Buccaneers, that's not good. That's not a good thing.
If it's hopefully Henry Toa Toa won't miss on Cooper Rush.
If it's 19-20, that's not a good thing. That's not where you want to be.
No.
So
I think it does keep their season alive, though, because obviously
– just like the result does.
Yeah, the result keeps their season alive, because I think if we went into the season, you know, projecting win-loss, looking at their schedule – like
everyone had this as well.
Everyone, well, not only that, but I think we would have accepted 2-3 as something they could have
possible.
Yeah, like if you were to tell me before the season, okay, they split the Rams and Bucks, which obviously didn't happen, but you split the Rams and Bucks, you take care of business against the Titans and Jags, you lose to the Ravens. I mean, I wouldn't be happy or satisfied. Like, oh, that's a great result because you would hope you could have beat the Bucks at home or you know the Rams or whatever. But I would still take that as, okay, they have a chance to still get to where they want to, and that, of course, being a trip back to the
playoffs.
It's
just when you start 0-3 and you get all the stats of teams that have started 0-3, especially teams that started 0-3 and in the first three games scored 38 points or less, which is all of them picked in the top five that year.
Right.
Every single one of them picked in the top five that year. And that's what the Texans were at.
The Texans are history makers, Sean.
They are, because they did make the playoffs after starting 0-3 in 2018.
Damn right.
But then the two wins after going 0-3 would be ass Titans team and ass defense on the Ravens and
ass
Lamar.
Quarterback, yeah.
Yeah, to where it's like, oh, maybe it's a shootout. It's like, nope.
The Texans cannot get a shootout with the Ravens. That would be concerning for a whole completely different reason.
So it's something where they did get their season on track, like, in theory, just like the wins-wise, the stats on the paper when you're looking at the standings, but they didn't do anything to actually engender any belief that things might change from the first three games of the season.
All right, that's completely fair. On the other side of the break, when we get back here again, the bullpen live at the Kima Boardwalk until 2 o'clock. Brian McDonald, Sean Mapes out here, John Belmer back in studio. A lot more in the Texans to discuss, and I have a hot take to throw Sean's way. See if he agrees with an opinion I had earlier this week. See if he agrees with something I'm going to throw out here on a certain Texans player. That with the bullpen returns, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
This is the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. Oh, and my phone is now telling me it's too hot out here at the Kima Boardwalk.
The
takes are off the track, apparently, the rest of the show. We'll see how it goes. ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. Now flying without anything to look out here, except for my quarter yard margarita that I'm now sipping on. Sean, you gonna tweet out a photo or something?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm crafting it right now.
I would send it out, but my phone is too much of a bee.
Pooped out.
Yeah.
The guy is drunk.
The guy is drunk, but there he goes. Thank you, Kevin Harlan. Johnny Belmer back in studio doing a great job as always. Sean and I out here at the Kiva Boardwalk right near the aquarium in the main plaza for the Oktoberfest. Shawnee, if you can pull up the notes for some of the things we should tell about these people, because I cannot.
No,
yeah, thanks. For the troll
Oktoberfest
job there.
Today, tomorrow. You can put on your dirndl and lederhosen. I saw, I don't know what's a dirndl, but I'm pretty sure I saw someone wearing one. There are people,
Do you know what lederhosen is, though?
I've seen that depicted on Hummels and such. I did see some people dressed up. I'm not seeing them right now. Those two ladies.
Up. There's some people with some hats over here.
Yeah. And the event is free. So whatever the lederhosen cost, that's on you. But the event itself is free, and
the cost of the margarita is also on you. Sean and I will not be buying.
Yes, yeah, beer tickets, beer steins, food tickets can all be purchased either at the event or online right now. When you and then when you get here, you're just ready to go. Get a drink in your hand, say cheers to Brian, and get this party started.
Damn right, brother. All right, so we were talking about the Texans in the last segment, and I teased going into break that I had a hot take to run by you and Johnny way in here too. See if you like what I'm laying down here. So, look, now this obviously depends upon the often fallacy of logical coaching, because just because we think something is logical doesn't necessarily mean that the coaches will, right? So sometimes that can be a little bit dangerous when you give a take based upon what you think is logical. But to me, Woody Marks showed in that last game that he deserves to be the running back one going forward. Now, he did out-snap, and I think he's out-snapped Nick Chubb for two games in a row, but not only did he out-snap Nick Chubb in this last game against the Titans, he also got more touches and more carries than Nick Chubb. I believe it was 17-14, 17-13, something like that. I continue to expect that trend to go forward to the point where Woody Marks, not that Nick Chubb will completely go away, but maybe this is more like a 2-1, 20 touches to 10 touches situation. I think we could see that. Definitely by, you know, maybe coming out of the bye. We'll see what happens with the game script in Baltimore. But I think Woody Marks, who's really only obviously had the one big game so far out of four, but there's still time left for this, not only because of a 17-game schedule, but also because getting to this mark really doesn't mean as much anymore. Listen to me undersell what I'm saying as a hot take.
I like this.
But I think Woody Marks will reach 1,000 rushing yards this season. Now, you're probably wondering, like, oh, God, what's the math on that? The math on that...
I was going to ask where we're starting at right now.
So I can't remember, again, because my phone died. He's a little over 100 yards, like 120 yards. So, which sounds like, well, he's got a long way to go, 13 games to get there. But the math...
Only 10% there.
I remember from when I looked this up earlier in the week, the math basically works out to 68 rushing yards per game. That's basically what it works out to. Now, that also implies he would have to stay healthy, which is obviously not a certainty with running backs. But what do you think of that, Sean? Woody Marks, not only, I guess, keeping the starting job and getting a majority of the touches, but having a chance to be a 1,000-yard rusher.
Is this more of a Woody Marks is awesome, or is it more of a he will be the best of the Houston Texans running backs, therefore he will get enough volume to do this? Like, this
I mean, both.
Okay, but this isn't
this
like
is both,
a...
This is both an indictment of Nick Chubb being, you know, old and washed.
He should already be the starter.
Yeah, and plus Woody
Marks... He probably
should
have been the starter earlier.
I mean, you never really want to take much from preseason, but I remember having this thought. I think it was
He flashed.
Yeah, not in the Carolina game, but whoever they played second. It wasn't the Lions. Whoever's in between, I don't remember. I'm a little bit into this margarita now. But I remember watching that game. I was like, man, he's the only guy with burst. And he's explosive. I knew him as a receiving back. I know he had 1,000 yards at USC last year. But I remember him more as a receiving back in college. And he was running people over. Now, again, it was a preseason. You don't know who he's facing. But I remember being really impressed, and Ross Tucker pointed this out on the broadcast of last week's game against the Titans, which, beyond his talents as a runner and receiver, which to me he's superior to this version of Nick Chubb in both.
Mm-hmm.
But we also saw, I forget the Titans DB's name, but we also saw him put a Titans defensive back on his ass in pass pro. Where a guy came in completely free, untouched, and he just
threw him on the ground.
Pancake blocked him. Yeah, he bullied him. So I think beyond what we've seen his talent be as a runner and a receiver, I think him showing that to the coaches when they look back at the tape this last week and see him absolutely lay out defenders that were coming free as rushers, I think he's going to earn himself enough touches to get there.
Yeah, I mean, I just pulled up another rookie running back from last season who came on, who was the backup to start the season, came on strong as the year went on. That's Bucky Irving from Tampa Bay.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, a guy we saw in week two. And so it was a little different. He had 9 carries for 62 yards week one, but then 7 for 22. And he
That's kind of more what Woody Martin got up until week four.
And then a 9 for 70, 10 for 49. So that's about 200 yards instead of.
Like, I think it's 120 for Woody Martin.
Yeah,
so
and so 120. But then there's still games in October where he had 23 and 24 yards rushing. It's just by the end of the season, he was pulling in 88, 152, 117, 113, 98, or 89. So and he got to 1,100 yards by doing that. So it is something where the mystique of 1,000 yards is.
It's definitely worn off.
It's worn off because you're like, well, you only need like 60 yards a game.
Yeah, it's really
like
not.
If you actually did just go 65-55 the entire season.
If you removed the end of the year total and just looked at the game by game log without knowing what it added up to, and you saw a guy going 63, 65, 57.
And a couple 150, 71. Like 100s.
Yeah, like you're like, that's fine.
Pretty good season.
But then you're like, oh, wait, he ran for 1,100 yards. 1100. It's like, oh, wait, that's really good.
Yeah, I deleted the page, but Bucky Irving also caught for like, a few hundred yards too.
So yeah, I don't expect.
He had like a very productive season. So I don't think Woody Marks is like quite at that level, or at least he hasn't shown.
Can he be Bucky Irving light?
Yeah, I think he can. I think he can. I think he could be Bucky Irving. I just wouldn't say it's probable or probable that you reach that potential in this offense.
Yeah, that's fair. So in this game, getting back to Texans versus Ravens, and maybe more so looking forward, but I mean, I think I thought of this comparison just because, well, it's the team they're facing only, 25 years ago. But as bad as the Texans' offense has been, but as elite as the Texans' defense has been, I don't know if you saw this, they're leading the league right now in points allowed. Now, obviously, in large part because of a shutout against the Ass Titans. But not only are they leading the league in points allowed, but it's like a 20-point gap. It's a significant difference between them and even the number two.
Even the games they lost to start the season, 22 and
they gave up,
14
to the Rams.
Yeah,
they gave
20.
Up 20 to the Bucks.
Yeah.
I don't remember how many the Jaguars scored, but it wasn't a lot.
17.
Yeah, exactly. So one team has reached 20 all year on them.
Yeah.
Is this Texans defense, if healthy, because obviously a Will Anderson or Derek Stingley injury changes everything, but if this Texans defense is healthy, are they capable of basically being like a 2000 Ravens where, I'm not saying C.J. Stroud is Trent Dilfer, that's disrespectful and I would never put that on him, and this offense certainly has more capability on the upside than that Ravens offense did in 2000, led by Jamal Lewis in the backfield. But could this Texans defense basically 2,000 Ravens their way to getting the Texans into the playoffs and winning a couple games? I won't even say win the Super Bowl, but winning a couple games.
A couple games?
Yeah. Minimum.
So going farther than any Texans team has ever gone?
Yes, because they've never won two playoff games in a single season. So could they win two? Because of the Texans defense is not elite.
I don't think the Texans defense is so good that it can be the greatest Texans team of all time.
Hater.
I just said that because,
hater.
And it's not because of the defense. Because
you're a hater.
It's because of the offense. Because like you said.
Are they worse than Trent Dilfer?
I think so. Because at least we talked about this last week with Will Kunkel. That at least the Ravens team, like you said, led by Jamal Lewis. They could run the ball. They could shorten
Woody
the
Marks,
game.
Woody Marks, baby. He's Bucky Irving
2.0. He's not Jamal Lewis 2.0.
Yeah, no, he's not. He's not.
Jamal Lewis had what, like
Jamal
1,300
Lewis
yards?
Was a man. Yeah,
at
he
least.
Was a man. He made people quit out in the
field. So I that to me is the biggest thing, is that they can't run the ball. They haven't demonstrated that they're a run it on anybody type of team where they can just get enough from their offense to have their defense keep them in games and eventually win them like that. They're a team that right now their offense is like directly hampering them against teams that are even decent this season.
All right, so let's get in quickly to maybe a prediction of this game. I don't know if you heard any of Jeremy and Joe this week, but Jeremy,
not a second of it.
Well, I feel that was an unnecessary detail you had to throw in.
Actually not true either. I listened to a few segments driving home.
Well, thank you. I thank you for your support, even though you initially gave no support.
No.
And then lied to me on top of that. I'm not feeling the love out here in Kima. I am feeling this margarita, though. It's quite tasty. Come out to Kima Boardwalk. We're here till 2. What was it? Oh. So Jeremy, because he's a troll, is picking the Ravens to win. Which I mean, it's not like it's an undefensible pick. I'm mostly kidding.
The Texans are only like 1.5 point.
One and a half to 2.5, depending on where you saw it. Yeah, I think 2.5 was the last that I saw.
Okay.
But Jeremy betted at 1.5 earlier in the week. So Jeremy or Joe and I picked the Texans to win. Jeremy picked the Ravens. I guess my thought is like, what is the if the Texans bleep it up? How do they bleep it up? And I think the thing that comes to mind first to me is, well, Derrick Henry has had like a run of like 3 straight 200-yard games against you in his past. Now, that was during a tanking era for the Texans, but the Texans' defense, as good as it is, which is the best in the league, what's been like their one big bugaboo so far?
Is the run defense.
Tony Pollard was the only good thing going for the Titans last week. We saw the Buccaneers running up the middle over
and over. Rashad White look like LaDainian Tomlinson.
Yes, exactly. So what is your fear level, I guess, 1 to 10, 10 being completely panicked, that Derrick Henry puts the team on the back like Greg Jennings back in the day and carries the Ravens to a victory?
I'd put it at like a 6, 5 in that range of like it's definitely on the board because you would just logically think like if you're the Ravens offense, you're like, well, no Lamar. Kind of want to take the ball out of our backup quarterback's hands like most teams do when they have a backup quarterback. So, yeah, let's just hand the ball off. Oh, to Derrick Henry, one of the best running backs in football.
Who, by the way, might be angry because the season outside of the Buffalo game hasn't really gone the way he's wanted it to go.
And he's had 2 key fumbles to play a part in those losses. So,
he got a game scripted out of the game against the Chiefs because they went down so quick.
Yeah, so I think that there's definitely going to be a lower chance, or at least it'll take a lot more for him to get game scripted out of this game. So you're not going to – I don't think you're going to be able to be like, hey,
I can't see that.
You score on the first drive, get a stop, get a field goal, because I'm being realistic as the Houston Texans. And
that's
you're
what
up,
they did against the Bucs.
Yeah, you're up 10 to nothing, and now they won't hand the ball off to Derrick Henry anymore. Because of the lack of options and because they're like, well, there's still 2.5 quarters left in this game, like we're not going to just try to win it on the arm of Cooper Rush.
Right.
Like you would if you're your starting quarterback, where you can maybe abandon the run a little bit more. You're not going to do that when you have your backup in. So I think that just the like focus on Derrick Henry from the Ravens offense will keep him a factor in the game no matter what. And if he's a factor for long enough, like he really only needs to pop off like 2 big ones.
Yeah, and I hope this is something I think a lot of people have noticed, but I noticed it I think for the first time in the Buccaneers game, but. And I get it's part of their defensive scheme, and it really works for pass rush situations because of the guys they have on the edge there with Will Anderson and Daniel Hunter. You know, if you put them out wide, it's going to be really hard on the offensive tackles to keep them because it gives them so much more of a like
an
kind
angle,
of a, like a two well that an angle like a two way go like a slot receiver.
Yeah,
where and, when they're not as tight into the line or to the tackle, it gives them a little more flexibility in how they. Rush the passer, but I'd hope specifically in this matchup they maybe play less of a wide split because like you said, like I mean it's going to be no surprise a heavy focus on running the ball with Derrick Henry. I don't want to see Will Anderson, it feels like, 5 paces out wide of the offensive tackle where he's lined up.
Yeah, and Derrick Henry's a guy you got to stop before he gets
the momentum,
the train going, because then it's way harder to tackle. And like we mentioned in the Bucs game, that was something the linebackers struggled to do.
Oh, for sure, especially Henry Toto. All right, we've got to get out here live at the Kima Boardwalk until 2 o'clock as a part of their Oktoberfest. We'll tell you what's going on with them when we get back on the other side of the break. Also get into some NFL topics and college football also around the corner here in the bullpen. ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You are listening to The Bullpen, live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios located at the Kima Boardwalk for Oktoberfest. Here's Joe George, Brian McDonald, and Sean Mapes.
Welcome back, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. As the big voice guy said, we are live at the Kima Boardwalk until 2 o'clock as a part of their Oktoberfest. Sean, if you have it up, let the fine people listening to this radio station know a few of the things they can find out here at the Kima Boardwalk as a part of their Oktoberfest.
Yeah, there's a lot of German beer, obviously, German food as well, live music. There's going to be a cornhole tournament. There is a cornhole.
About 30 feet to our left.
Yes,
here.
I don't know if that's the official.
I see beanbags over here. So
tournament grounds, or is that the putting green?
It might be a warm up area.
But Stein holding. You can hold a Stein for a while. I know that about you, Brian. costume contests, much more. Obviously, they have just a variety of food. The schnitzel on a stick. They have German beer bratwurst, sausage on a stick. Whatever you want, they got it on a stick, apparently. German potato salad, sauerkraut, soft pretzel with beer cheese. It's a lot of good stuff.
I'm getting hungry. But unfortunately, Johnny has to listen to us read that off, and he can't then go get himself some. Although he could drive out here to the Kima Boardwalk.
Yeah,
but
nothing's stopping John from
you
going.
And I are like 50 feet away from getting all this food, so that might be here in my future before I head on back out to
You could just bring me some.
No, I'm not going to do that, John. I'm not going to drive to the station. Are you kidding me? Although you do live, 10 minutes away from where
exactly,
I live, but I'm still not
going
to do it.
Barely out of your way.
I'm still not going to do it. No, it's a little much. You want to meet me in my house? Maybe. All right, so let's talk some NFL here. The Browns made a change at quarterback. No longer will old man Flacco be under center for the Brownies. Instead, they make the move to Dillon Gabriel, the rookie quarterback out of Oregon at OU before that. I guess more from a fantasy perspective, because I'm not really going to dive into can he be a great quarterback, because who knows. But, Sean, if you were so tortured as to have Browns players on your fantasy roster, maybe a Jerry Jeudy or a Quinshon Judkins or maybe one of the tight ends, Harold Fannin or David Njoku, what would you be thinking about this change from Flacco to Dillon Gabriel?
I think it's good for the tight ends and running backs, but those guys were already doing all
right.
Yeah,
Judkins have been great so far.
At least relative to expectations and where they're drafted. So, yeah, I think Dillon Gabriel's going to have the bumpers on the bowling lane. It's going to be very shallow shots. I don't think he's going to be pushing the ball down the field more than Joe Flacco does. So that does kind of worry you a little bit when it comes to Jeudy and Cedric Tillman in that. But I think the running backs and the tight ends should remain eating. I don't know if they actually get better.
I don't think they will.
I think just the volume is all that helps. But yeah.
Do you think Shedeur Sanders takes a start before the season's over?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do I too. I mean,
chances are.
All right, I gotta ask. What'd you think of his whole pants miming bit the other day?
That was interesting.
I don't know.
I just thought it was interesting. Never saw anyone do that before.
Yeah, if you missed it, Rex Ryan had some really strong and, frankly, weird words about Shedeur Sanders, in my opinion, and about, I guess, him talking too much, though I really hadn't heard Shedeur say.
Yeah, he's just in the locker room.
Yeah, he's just in the locker room answering the questions that reporters ask him. So I don't really know why Rex Ryan was so bent out of shape about it. But he went on a rant, and as a response to that, when reporters went and asked him questions in the locker room the next day, he mouthed the words, but no sound came out. He just mimed it.
Because I think Rex Ryan said he needs to keep his mouth shut. But then by miming it,
you're not keeping your mouth shut.
Yes,
yet.
But
your
no words actually, came out.
You know, yeah. I guess it's open to interpretation. To me, if I were to troll Rex Ryan, I guess, more accurately, I would have done the little zipper motion across your lips, I can't talk or whatever.
Duct tape over.
Yeah, a little duct tape over your mouth. But that was a bit comical. All right, so let's look around the NFL here. I'm curious, who do you think has reached contender status in the NFL? Obviously, there's some established teams that are no brainers.
Yeah.
But let's first look at the NFC East. You just tell me who's in, just tell me who's in. I'll name off the teams. You tell me who's in. Eagles, Commanders, Cowboys, and Giants. I think the answer here is probably pretty obvious, but who has contender status in the NFC East?
Eagles, green light all the way.
Yes.
I think yellow light on Washington.
I think I'm a red light on Washington.
They haven't had their quarterback for 2 weeks.
To me, though, they didn't really at least against Green Bay, they didn't look like a contender with them. I get that this one game. But I had questions coming into the season anyway, like, you know, like what's the running back situation?
That's fair. I also had questions.
I wasn't sure what Terry McLaurin was going to be missing all of training camp. And obviously now he's hurt, so like a lot of, you see that all the time with guys who miss camp and then get, you know, camp strings, so to speak, when they try to rep up and come back. So I think I'm a red light on Washington. I assume Cowboys and Giants obviously both hard red lights. Going to the NFC West, I mean, I feel like we could say almost green light on three of the four teams, but Niners, Seahawks, Rams, Cardinals. Who's the contender here?
Niners, Rams, green immediately. I think with the Seahawks, you need to define what contender means.
Has like, a chance to win the Super Bowl, like a real like you would place like you'd at least be willing to throw like a long shot bet on their odds to win the Super Bowl.
Honestly, they're like the alternate reality if like things worked out for the Texans this year, where it's just like an awesome defense and like a offense where you're just like yeah. Okay, you know, like, okay, that's a pretty, that works for me, I guess, with one really good receiver and not much else that you're super enthused about. Interesting running backs. I guess that's what they have over the Texans, other than Woody Marks.
Hey, Woody,
I wouldn't say they're interesting at running back. So I'll give them a green just because I kind of feel like I should because they have been that good.
I think I'm yellow on them. Yeah. Like I hear what you're saying, like green, just like I don't, maybe this is fantasy burn speaking, but I don't really feel like I could trust Ken Walker over a long season. And Sam Darnold,
but like Charbonnet's good enough to
He is. He probably is. JSN's great, but like who else do they have behind him?
Cup,
like,
Horton.
Yeah, it's just like who's, and then obviously Sam Darnold, like I know I might be working off of takes from 4 years ago at this point, but it still feels like Sam Darnold isn't someone
I think
can
that's fair.
Fully throw my trust into.
Given how the last two games of last season went, I think that's fair.
Yeah. All right, so let's finish off the NFC here. NFC North, I think these are probably, I think we're going to agree on these, but Lions, Packers, Vikings, Bears. I'm a full green light on the Lions, obviously.
Yep.
And I was a green light on the Packers, but I think I'm leaning more now to yellow, same with, and then probably a red on the Vikings and the Bears.
I think I'm a soft green on the Packers. It's like green, but I'm disappointed. You know,
yeah,
I'm not upset.
I thought they were the best team in football after two games.
Yeah, and then you lose to the Browns,
and then you tie against the Cowboys.
You spiritually lose to the Cowboys.
You spiritually lose, yes.
Cowboys spiritually won that game. So I think that I'll keep them green just because of what they did to the Lions in week one and what they did to the Commanders in week two. But since then, it has been it's been lacking in that. But I think they have enough goodwill still, and a little bit's just also the expectations that you have of this team going into the season that they'll figure it out. And then I'm good with the Reds on the other two teams.
All right, one more division here before we go to break, because I'm also out of margaritas, so I got to fix that. Yeah, like I don't know if I could keep talking.
Add another minute to the break.
Yeah, we might have to add another one, Johnny. Daddy's got another margarita to get. NFC South, don't clip that, please. NFC South, I think this is probably just a one green light division, IMO. But Bucks, Falcons, Saints, and Panthers. Who's got contender status in this division?
Yeah. Normally I'd be like, okay, don't lead the witness there, Brian, by saying, I think it's one green light, but what do you think?
Please co-opt all of my opinions, Sean.
But I would love to disagree with you. I would love to push back on you. And say, how dare you speak for me? But I think when it comes to the NFC South, you can speak for me. It's one green light.
So where are you with Michael Penix?
Not high. Not low.
Because I think that's
but
really...
also not high. Like, I haven't seen anything where I'm like, oh, this guy could be a real deal dude. But I also, I don't know, getting shut
he's
out.
He's had games where he's looked like a real dude, but then the Panthers game happened.
Yeah, and that's a real black mark for me, getting shut out by the Panthers.
It's a huge black mark. Yeah, I think I'm there. And really, I mean, Buccaneers, obviously green light. Panthers and Saints, hard red light. Really, to me, the Falcons, not to state the obvious here, because it depends on the quarterback. No crap. But if Michael Penix turns out to be a plus player, I think they do earn green status, because I like the pieces around them with Bijan and Drake London. Even Kyle Pitts is having a bit of a renaissance. But if Michael Penix doesn't get it together, then
Yeah, what are we doing?
Yeah, what are we doing?
I think that's fair, and I think it's fair to expect Michael Penix could be better because he still is in, what, his, like, 10th start in the league?
Yeah, I think he had 3 starts last year, maybe 4.
Okay, so even less. So he's at, like, 6 or 7
No
starts.
More than 4.
Yeah, so I think there's a little bit of benefit of the doubt that you give, like, okay, maybe he gets his footing under him and starts playing a little bit better because, you know, CJ Stroud also lost to the Panthers when he was
did.
A rookie. Like
he also lost to the Falcons as a rookie.
Yeah, he lost to Desmond Ridder. So there are some warts on any, you know, young quarterbacks. It's not all just going to be a roller coaster to the top.
All right. More college football and NFL topics along the way, plus 130, of course, Mount Rushmore plus 1. Brian and Sean out here at the Kima Boardwalk until 2 o'clock, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
Houston's only FM sports stations, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at the Kima Boardwalk for Oktoberfest. It's the Bullpen with Joe George, Brian McDonald, and Sean Mapes.
Welcome back in. ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5 here until 2 o'clock live at the Kima Boardwalk. As we were about this time last year, Sean, we were also out here for Oktoberfest last year. And actually, I don't know if it's the exact same date, but it's the exact same part of the calendar because it was also on the day of Alabama and Vandy last year, which we remember as the day that Vandy really stamped their arrival as a team you had to take seriously in the SEC on the backs of Diego Pavia. And here we go again, Alabama and Vanderbilt today. Yep. Let's start there before we kind of maybe skip around to some other things. You think Vandy can do it again?
I think they can. I don't think they will.
Obviously, this game in Bama last year was in
Vanderbilt. The added element of there's not really a chance that Alabama just kind of tries to sleepwalk through this one.
Like you would hope they would take them seriously. Yeah.
Yeah. If there's one game in the season, because last season for Alabama, it set up a very similar way where they beat Georgia. Then the next week, they, in this case, went to Vanderbilt and played as we were in Kima Boardwalk. Yeah. It's the same thing for
you
Bama.
You and I watched it while eating shrimp at Bubba
Yes,
Gump.
Yes. Yeah. So I think that there is like the, oh, what if it's a little bit of a hangover effect from beating Georgia, just like last year? The difference between last year is, last year they lost to Vanderbilt, so they might have overlooked Vanderbilt a little bit more
100%. Than they're going to they do this year.
Yes, then they're going to overlook them this year. And Diego Pavia definitely seems like a guy who will remind them and is someone that really gets under your skin when you lose to that guy when you're a 5-star from Alabama.
Yeah, I just don't know because I think so much of what this game will depend on is what you just kind of hit on, like the where Alabama's at, like, kind of just in their motivation. Like, they should be motivated. This is a team that beat them last year. It's a team that's now, what, like, top 20 in the nation, like 15 or something like that?
16, 15 range,
like that. So, like, there's no reason you should be down for Vanderbilt, but this is the same Alabama team that went in, you know, start the season, went to Florida State and just completely no-showed. So I don't really know what to make of this Alabama team week to week under Kalen DeBoer. But if he loses, obviously he got the critics off his back, at least temporarily, with that win at Georgia last week. But if they lose to Vandy again, and now you've got a losing streak against Vandy, all of a sudden the old ladies on TV talking about hitting the lottery to pay for a buyout will jump back into the conversation.
Yeah, not a must-win for Alabama. Shout out to Will Conkle. But very close.
Oh, man, hard disagree.
Very close.
They've already got one loss. Well, okay. No, look, I'm not going to completely read.
They can make it at 10-2.
Yeah, okay, that's fair. Okay, if they lose, though, they would put themselves in a situation where the rest of their schedule is must-win.
Yes,
all right.
Immediate peril.
There we go.
Immediate peril.
All right, okay, now we can
not just job safety for Kalen DeBoer, but I fear actual safety concerns for Kalen DeBoer, though.
All right, so let's get to a game also in the SEC, one that you and I will be closely watching once we drive home from Kima because it starts at, I believe, 2:30, so we won't be home by kickoff, but Texas going to Florida. this is a Florida team that outside of their opening week win against, I believe, Long Island University, which I didn't know they had a football team until Florida beat them. But you look at what's happened to them afterwards, playing Miami, playing USF, and I forget the other team of their schedule. But the three games following that opening win against Long Island, they scored under 20 points in each of those games. This is an offense led by DJ Lagway that we thought was going to be a lot better in year two with DJ Lagway, but has really been disappointing. I kind of feel like this is a game where the Longhorns, even if their offense also struggles, because Arch Manning outside the Sam Houston game has been pretty pedestrian, and that's really putting it mildly, I think the Longhorns kind of not blow them out, but kind of win a comfortable, like, two-score game where it's, like, never a blowout, but it always you always feels like you have them at arm's length.
27-14.
Exactly. Kind of, something like that, just because the defense completely – like, I honestly don't know how Florida gets past, like, 13 points in this game.
Yeah, it's going to be tough for the Florida offense, especially because they haven't been – like you said, they haven't been lighting up the scoreboard. They really haven't been that efficient, and they also – turn the ball over a lot, especially Lagway with the interceptions against LSU. So it is a recipe for disaster so far, and the Longhorns have one of the best defenses in college football. So there could be some rain, there could be some weather, so it could be more tamped down scoring-wise, less wide open.
You playing the under on this game?
I mean, I don't know what the number is. I will
pull it up as you're talking here.
Spiritually, it should be an under.
It feels like,
spiritually,
yeah.
It's going to be a tough watch.
42.5.
42.5. Yeah, that could be an under. I think that this is going to be an absolute – like, if you're not a Florida or Texas fan, like –
why are you watching?
You probably should not be watching
this
game.
It's definitely going to be an ugly game. We're live out here at the Kima Boardwalk as part of their Oktoberfest. We currently have a guy walking around in stilts, full German attire. How's it going, sir? He's got juggling pins. I don't know if he's about to start juggling, but oh, look, he's going to start juggling.
Yeah.
Oh, here we go.
Oh, he's balancing.
Oh, he's balancing it on his nose. Look at this. This is pro-level stuff out here. No amateurs.
Wow.
Wow, well done, sir. So come out here to the Kima Boardwalk. Lots of
personal
great food and drinks. Not only great food and drinks, but we have a juggler on stilts here.
I was going to say, how does he pick them up if he drops them?
That's a good question.
Obviously, he just never drops them. And you're
Look at that. He's okay.
Oh, no.
Oh, we're about to get a show here. Oh, he dropped one. He dropped one. Okay. All right. You asked, Sean. We're about to find out.
Okay.
If this man busts his head, it's on you.
Okay.
Oh. I'm very nervous right now. I am so nervous right now. Okay. He got it, Sean.
Yeah.
Look at that. Oh, well done,
there
sir.
There you go.
You had to be out here on site to keep a barquat. Make sure you come out. We're out here till 2. The festivities go on for much longer than that. Let's get back into some college football. Probably the biggest game on the schedule. I believe it's the night game tonight as well. Miami going to Florida State. Florida State obviously got a wake-up call with their loss to Virginia last week. I'm curious what you think about that, because Carson Beck, for his career, not usually – a great road quarterback, playing a little bit better this year, I think, than what we've seen in years past.
Yeah.
To me, he's always kind of been meh, but I think maybe because of how good the Miami receivers are, he's, you know, playing a little better. Because those Georgia receivers last year had so many drops.
Yeah.
But what is your feel on this game?
Yeah, I think Carson Beck is a little bit of a product of his environment, where last season Georgia's receivers weren't that good.
So many drops.
The year before, he had Brock Bowers and Ladd McConkey.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this year with the Miami receiving core, he's with the especially for the level of teams that they are going to play most weeks, they're going to be way better on offense than anyone. So I think it'll be an interesting spot for him. I think it's really the most interesting thing that could have happened was Florida State lose the game before this game, where you feel like you're going to get a really focused, really a really good effort from this Florida State team, and they're going to need it against the best team on their schedule.
Yeah, certainly so. So before we go to break, real quickly, one of the other topics I had for college football was, like, who would be the next coach fired? We've seen Mike Gundy, quote-unquote, retire 2 weeks ago, and then Sam Pittman got pushed out at Arkansas. This feels like a spot where if Texas goes and wins by two or three scores, it could be the week for Billy Napier. But if it's not Billy Napier, obviously Hugh Freeze would probably be someone that people will talk about. Who do you think is the next coach fired in college football?
Yeah, I'm literally just going down the games this week. Oh,
Luke Fickell at Wisconsin.
Oh, yes.
He's in the danger zone going to Michigan. Actually, that game started. They're down 10-7 in the third quarter against Michigan. Not terrible.
Just 10-7 in the third quarter?
Yeah. It's not embarrassing. It's not an embarrassing loss. So. Yeah.
Not an embarrassing loss, but not a game I'm sad I'm missing right now.
You're right on that. So yeah, I would say you got those guys. I think we got all of them. Bill Belichick.
I was
down
curious,
35-3 at halftime to Clemson.
Ooh, Clemson of all teams, a team that started 1-3. I threw that out to Jeremy and Joe on this last week's show. That I think Joe was more on my side than Jeremy, but. Man, it's been embarrassing. I don't know what people's expectations were for Belichick. Take a year off. He's in his mid-70s to go into college football where he, you know, hasn't coached before. At least if he did, he was a young man. You know, obviously it's been a long time that he was in the NFL with the Giants and the Browns and then Jets for a day and then the Patriots. But I don't. Despite what people's expectations would have been, I can't imagine. I mean, I imagine he's fallen short of even lowered expectations for him. Like, you throw on top of that the embarrassing stuff on the sidelines with his girlfriend that's 40 years younger. Like, I can see him getting run out after a year.
I think they've been embarrassing in context after losing the first game of the season to TCU. I think they've been more, like, however low you were in that moment, they have not met those expectations yet. They're down 35-3 at halftime. This is after losing 34-9 at
UCF. Who are they playing again?
At UCF. And then they beat Charlotte 20-3 and Richmond 41-6. So they
only beating Charlotte 20-3 and maybe even more damning than the others.
I was going to say unless they don't look better than anybody, unless it's an FCS team.
Man, yeah. So you think 1-10? What are the odds Bill Belichick makes it to next season?
Pretty low. I'd go
10. Is it 10? Is a guarantee. One he's out.
Like 4-3.
Yeah, I feel that's pretty fair.
There might be a little bit of like give me one more year to like implement stuff and really get it right. But I could also see him going, you know what, bleep this, I'm out.
Yeah, no, certainly. So let me just go to Cancun with my 25-year-old girlfriend and spend my rest of the days like that. I could see him.
Living totally the dream.
Those are the words of Sean Mapes, not Brian McDonald. Happily married man. All right, Kiva Boardwalk. We're here until 2, one more hour to go. It's a part of their Oktoberfest. That's going way past 2 o'clock when we'll be out here. So make sure you come out and try the great food, the great drinks. Lots of people in costumes. There's a Stein holding contest, as Sean has mentioned. There's a guy on stilts juggling right now.
Oh, he's on stilts.
Yeah.
And
he's 8 foot tall. He should play for the Rockets. But he even showed Sean on cue how he could pick up a bowling pin that he dropped
quite,
to the ground.
It was quite the show.
I thought you almost put this man's death on your head, but thankfully he came through for you. When we get back on the other side of the break, some more NFL, college football, and our game picks as well. That with the bullpen returns, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.